Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Jules.
Shalom, good morning, Jan.
Well, it's the three J's back again, Jules, Joe and Joan.
Woo-hoo.
And we're welcome you all to join us for the second part of Jewish humor. And we depend on Jules to sort of pick up where he left off. And we hope that in the interim that you've been all collecting jokes.
And stories.
And stories. So we will tell you later on where you can send them to. So,
good.
And if you would like to come and tell jokes on air, do please contact me and let me know. Okay, Jules.
I'm going to repeat a little bit of what I said last time. And the first thing is the blessing. May you always find reasons to laugh. That's going to be my theme for this year. But I hope you, the listeners, will adopt that policy as well. And also, for those of you who didn't hear last week or don't remember, I said, if you laugh a lot, a real lot, when you get older, your wrinkles will be in the right places. And it doesn't matter how old you are, because age is just a number. I'll also repeat that Jewish humor, I defined it as practice. And last week we saw where the practice came about. We had deprivation and oppression, and laughter and humor was a form of release, and we've had a lot of practice. And I hope that you, the listener at home, have been practicing since last time I spoke with you.
And not through oppression, but through just laughter.
Thank you for correcting me. The next category of Jewish humor is employees and business. Here again, we had times of oppression. We had times that there was no work. And this is throughout the countries that we found ourselves as strangers in a strange land. And if we did find work, we had no rights. And the pay was low. And there were long hours. Can recollect the rag trade in America.
Mm-hmm.
People worked. There were no unions. There were Jews who organized unions, but in the early days, they had no rights.
And women got killed. Killed fires, and yes. Till quite late.
Yeah. Mm. There were waves of immigration into America. Do you know that the first one was in 1654 from Brazil?
I didn't know
1654. That. Mm. Just going back a bit of history, we had the Portuguese conquered Brazil. And that was, we had the Spanish Inquisition in 1492. And then we had the Portuguese Inquisition in 1497.
They were also slavers.
They were slavers. So now Brazil expelled the Jews. And I dare say it was the Portuguese in Brazil that expelled them. So they went to America. Then we had the big wave from after World War I. 1840, we had a wave of Germans who went to America. And in 1840, they established themselves. Then in 1880, 40 years later, all the way through to 1920, 25, 2 million Jews came to America. Russians, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Romania, and each group brought its own culture.
And food.
So a lot of them, the Germans had already established themselves in business. And when the Russians arrived, they gave them employment. But they were not good employers. They had in those days what we call sweatshops. You know, sweatshops, nowadays we say Nike had sweatshops because they were employing people underage and paying them nothing. But sweatshops started in the rag trade in America. So, of course, we now have humor. We have a release. And the story is, Moshe goes to work one day, and his friend Sam And he's standing next to him and he says, I wish I don't feel like working today. I wish I had some reason that I could stop working today. And all of a sudden he jumps up on the desk and there's a light hanging down, chandelier, and he grabs hold of it and he pulls himself up so that his feet are touching the ceiling and his head is hanging down. And the boss walks past and he says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm a light." And the boss says, "You've snapped. Get down. Take 2 days compulsory sick leave." So he gets down, puts his jacket on, and he's got the smirk on his face, and he's walking out. And his friend Sam puts his jacket on, and the boss says to him, "Where do you think you're going?" He says, "I can't work in the dark." This comes from oppression. Right.
So you're saying, really, humor started in America mainly?
You know, all the Jewish comedians that we have in America, I think it gathered momentum from these tough times.
From the different countries.
Different countries. Jewish humor, I think, has been in our DNA for thousands of years because of the oppression and because of all the practice we've had.
We haven't got much humor in the Bible, have we?
No. But where was the oppression in the Bible? You want to say that we had humorous standing on top of the pyramids in Egypt because we were slaves and, you know, shouting out.
So when the sea gathered over the Egyptians.
That wasn't funny.
Miriam danced and laughed.
Ah, yes, yes.
Yes, and God said, "You naughty girl."
Good one. But most of the stuff in the Bible that we couldn't consider funny is not considered funny by our maker and by our leaders. You know, stuff happened which maybe was funny. They got punished for it.
Okay, so we'll go back to American humor. Now, and there's British humor too.
There's British humor.
It's not as successful as American
humor. You know, British comedy is American comedy and British comedy. British comedy, I'll talk Jewish, is more serious and it's more dry.
Yeah.
Whereas American comedy is humorous, it's situational, it's stuff. What is humor? It's something that you listen to and you're following a particular thought pattern and then suddenly there's something that says that just breaks that thought pattern and it's totally different and you burst out laughing because you were expecting something else. So
yeah,
that's American comedy.
The British comedy is a bit more satirical, a bit more serious. And often a play of words.
Puns, yeah, play of words, yes. Do you think it's more intelligent?
No, I was just thinking a lot of the old Jewish jokes are about mother-in-laws.
Mm.
So they chose somebody who couldn't bite back.
Jewish humor, you know, both American and British humor on mother-in-laws is really, it's how bad the mother-in-law is and how you want to stay away from her and how, what's the difference between a mother-in-law and a bulldog? Well, a bulldog eventually lets go. That's the kind of non-Jewish humor. The Jewish humor is like this. Two guys are chatting to each other and the one says to the other, you know, he says, "I haven't spoken to my mother-in-law for 2 years. The other one says, "Wow, you must have had such a fight with her." No. He says, "I haven't fought with her at all. It's just that I don't like to interrupt." Just cute, isn't it?
It's always about mother-in-laws, not about father-in-laws.
Well, I don't know. You can answer that. Let's ask Sarah Silverman because she was anti-racism and anti-sexist and she would swear and shout and command of her about issues like this, but I don't know the answer.
Mumby, we've got our own Deb Filler.
Yes, yes.
So, and Deb can make baking a bread funny.
Yes.
So,
okay, but now I'll answer your question. Why mother-in-laws and not father-in-laws? Well, because mother-in-laws are typically interfering. You must cook like this, and the son aggravates that because he says, "Why can't you be like my mother? Why can't you have food, gribbiness and all that stuff that my mother makes?" And that's like pouring oil on the fire.
Okay, next.
Okay, so here's a true story about business, and it's a contemporary story. It happened at my time. I worked for a firm of accountants straight after school called Fisher Hoffman Levenberg, and there's a story told about one of the partners, Sonny Fisher. It was good sense of humor. He goes, the offices were in the building on the fifth floor, and he goes downstairs where they had a barber shop on the ground floor. And as he's walking in, one of his employees is walking out. And he says to him, "What are you doing here?" And the employee says, "I came to have a haircut." And Sonny says, "You can't have a haircut in the firm's time." And he says, "Why not?" He says, "The firm's time." He says, "Well, my hair grows in the firm's time." So Sonny says to him, he says, "Well, it doesn't all grow in the firm's time." And he says, "Well, I didn't cut it all off." True story. Back to business. Because we had no rights, we became traders. And traders were not only in the local areas, we became traders worldwide.
They're peddlers.
Peddlers. Peddlers. In Afrikaans, called a smous. Mm. They used to put stuff, merchandise, on their backs.
And their backpacks.
Backpacks, and they used to go around selling it. And they became good traders. There was two people in our own very land in New Zealand, in Christchurch, which, as you know, is a very Christian city. And they were sitting on the sidewalk, and one of them had a chain around his neck, and at the end of the chain was a cross. And the other one had a chain around his neck, and at the end of the chain was a mug and dovid. And they both had hats in front of them. And after a while, the guy with the cross, his hat was filling up. And the guy with the chain and the mug and dovid had just a trickle of coins in his hat. And a priest walks past, and he looks at the two hats, and he looks at the people walking past and sees that they're putting coins into the hat with owned by the cross. And he walks up to the guy with the mug and dovid, and he says, "You know, I think you might have got it wrong." He says, "This is a Christian city, and you can see what's happening. I think you misread the situation." And the guy with the mug and dovid says, "Oh, thanks for telling me." And the priest walks off, and the guy with the mug and dovid leans over to the guy with the cross, and he says, "Moshe, he's trying to teach us marketing." Now, in business, I think we know that we are put in a box as people who always talk about money, 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 and you know. So here's the story about money. And incidentally, we also became dealers in money. Again, because we had no rights, we became brokers. I think the Rothschild family.
The Rothschild family started. That's where they got worldwide. They had such a big family.
Mayer Rothschild, I think his first deal was he arranged finance for England from Germany. And he took a percentage for arranging it. And they became exceedingly wealthy.
But they were great philanthropists.
Great philanthropists. Worldwide. I mean, they were so wealthy. They once asked Mayer Rothschild what his wealth is. How much? And he said, "No, I don't know." And they said, "Well, you know, you must have some idea." So they pressed him for an answer. And he said, "I am worth what I've given away." As a philanthropist, "I've given." So they said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Because what I've given away, they can't take away from me." Because anti-Semitism was high. Mm. So what I've given away, they can never take away from me. Nice answer. Luckily, the stories are like this. Three Jews are walking down the road. Three Jewish men. And they walk past the church, and there's a billboard, a signboard outside the church, which says, "If you convert to Christianity, we will give you $1,000. So one of the Jews says, "That's for me." So the other two say, "No, you can't do that. It's a disgrace. What are you talking about?" He says, "No, no." He says, "I'm going to do it." So he goes inside the church, and we know that a conversion is quite a quick process. You got to accept Jesus into your life and need a baptism. And he comes out 15 minutes later and he says, well, that's done. And the other guys say, well, did you get the money? And he says, that's all you Jews ever talk about. And, of course, following on from that, exactly the same thing. The guys are walking and one of them says, I'm going to convert because it's Hanukkah. Hanukkah, you got to have Hanukkah geld. Got to have money to give to your wife and your kids. And he hasn't got money. So he says, I need the $1,000. I'm going to go and convert. So he goes inside, and same thing, comes out 15 minutes later, and he goes home. And when he gets home, he says to his wife and his family, he says, sitting at the table, and he throws his arms up, and he says, I've got Hanukkah geld. And the son says, oh, Dad, that's fantastic. You know, that PlayStation that I wanted for a year, please, please, can I have it? And he says, how much? And he says, it's $300. So he takes out the wad, and he peels off $300 and he gives it to the son. And the daughter says, Dad, you know those pearl earrings that I've had my eye on for a whole year? Please, please, can I have it? He says, how much? And she says, $300, gives her $300. And the wife says, Moshe, you know those necklace that I really want, the very nice looking diamond-shaped necklace. Please, please, can I have it? And he says, how much? And she says, $400. And he gives her the balance, $400. And then he looks at his family and he says, yeah, as soon as we Christians get some money, you Jews take it off us. Same story. Now, following on that, because we were in business, we became very good at relationships. Business relationships, people relationships, family relationships. I think generally speaking, I mean, there is some non-relationships, and within relationships in Judaism, we have problems, we have there's abuse. But generally speaking, we are communicative. We do form relationships.
Is that because of having communication skills?
Because of having to trade worldwide, because of having to deal with a variety of people. So Moshe is working for Harry, and he says to him, he says, Harry, he says, you know, I know everybody. So Harry says, oh, you know, we all know a lot of people, but we can't know everybody. He says, no, 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 I know everybody. He says, everybody? Yeah. He says, well, can you prove it? He says, sure, test me. So Harry says, well, do you know Madonna? Madonna, sure I know Madonna. Let's go. So get on a plane and off to Hollywood. And they get to Madonna's house and what did I call him? Did I call him Sam? Sam and Harry. Okay, so Sam, the Jewish guy, knocks on the door and as luck would have it, the door is opened by Madonna. And she looks at the two of them and she says, Sam, hi, nice to see you. Come inside, let's have tea, bring your friend. So they go inside and they spend a couple hours. And at the end of it, Harry says, well, he says, that's really impressive. But he said, could be a coincidence. Excuse me. So he says, well, test me again. So he says, do you know Barack Obama? He says, sure. So off they go, they fly to the White House. They go inside and while they're waiting, Barack comes with his entourage of people, you know, ministers and whatever. And he sees Sam and he says, Sam, hi, nice to see you. Come inside. Let's have tea. Bring your friend. So they go inside and they chat for a couple hours and then they come out. And Harry says, well, that's really impressive, but I'm still not convinced. Could be a coincidence. He says, who else? He says, the Pope. Sure. So off they go to the Vatican. And they get to the piazza or the square at St. Peter's Cathedral where the Pope comes out on the balcony. And while they're standing there, they see the Pope looking down at them and they can see his lips saying, hi, Sam, nice to see you. Come up, let's have tea, bring your friend. So Harry says to Sam, he says, you go, go, go. Go and talk to the Pope. So he goes and he's now standing, Sam is standing on the balcony with the Pope, and they look down and they see Harry fainting. So the Pope says to him, "What's wrong?" He says, go and attend to your friend. So he runs down and he finds his boss, and he's lying on the ground, and he picks up his head and he holds him in his arms and he revives him, slaps his face a few times, and he says to him, "Harry, what happened? What happened?" He says, "Well, you know, when you told me that you know Madonna," he says, "I could handle that. When you told me you know Barack Obama and we had tea with him, that I could handle." He says, "But when I'm standing here looking up at you and this guy I've never seen before in my life comes up to me, pulls me on the sleeve and he says, 'Who's that guy in the long white robe talking to Sam?' He says, that I couldn't handle anymore." So he fainted. The other story on communication is, I might call it a religious story, and it is at the time of George Bush, at the time that Iraq was intending to invade Kuwait. Remember that? I think it was called the Desert War. So just before the war, the CIA come to the president and they say, "Mr. President, we've got bad news for you." "What is that?" he says. "Well, our agents in the field have just advised us that Saddam Hussein, Iraq, intends to invade Kuwait." So George Bush says, "This is news." They say, "Yes, straight off our agents." He says, "So how come the Israelis told me about it last week?" "No, impossible." "Not impossible. They told me about this last week." "Well, Mr. President, what are we going to do?" "Well, I don't know what we're going to do, but first we've got to find out how come the Israelis found out before our people." I say, "Okay, we'll go out, give us a day to find out." They come back the next day, and they say, "Mr. President, we don't know how this works, but we think we found the source, and we've arranged a meeting between you and the chief rabbi in Washington." So he sees the chief rabbi, and he says to him, "How come the Israelis found out about the impending war before my agents?" And the chief rabbi says, "You know, on Shabbos we go to shul, and he says one person stands next to another, and we say, you know, 'Vos het sich? Nu, vos het sich?' Which means, what's happening? What's going?" "And that's how we get the news," he says. And the president says, "That's how you got the news about the Israeli, from the Israelis got the news of the impending war?" He says, "Yes, the war, everything, we get all the news." So the president comes home, this is unbelievable. And he says to his aides, he says, "Look, I've got to test this out. So what I want is I want you to teach me how to walk into shul. I want you to teach me how to say without any flaws, 'Nu, vos het sich?' so that I can go into shul." And for 2 weeks, they school him every day. "Nu, vos het sich? Nu, vos het sich?" And they teach him how to walk, that he looks Jewish. And then comes the Friday night that he's going to go to shul. They give him the uniform, you know, the long black coat and the girdle. And they give him side curls. And they give him the hat and the top hat. Nobody can recognize him. This is now going to be really a Jewish guy going to shul. And he walks into shul. And he walks little steps down to the front of the shul. And he stands next to a Jew who's already there. And he says, "Nu, vos het sich?" The guy looks up at him and he says, "Vos het sich? I'll tell you what's happening tonight." He says, "George Bush is coming in the shul tonight." So that is business. Our next topic is anti-Semitism. And here again, we can see that we've had practice. We've had practice because anti-Semitism has been going on for years. And we can start off with Purim. Purim was Haman trying to wipe out the whole Jewish population and failed. And you know what we always say? We say they tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat. So anti-Semitism has always been. Now, sometimes more and sometimes less. And today we talk about anti-Semitism as if it's always been around. But it hasn't. There have been For instance, golden years in Spain or in Iberia, which is Spain and Portugal. And that started in the round about the 7th century. And it went all the way through to the 15th century at the time of the Spanish Inquisition. It wasn't always golden years. There were some horrible massacres during that period. But there were periods of hundreds of years where there was peace and where the Jews, they call it the golden years.
And their poetry, and they wrote
mathematics, science, poetry. Yeah. It's amazing the stuff that came out of the Iberian Peninsula at that time. Why? Because it depended on the rulers. Some rulers said, no, there's a Jewish problem, we've got to deal with them, and there were massacres.
Isn't it one, the physician to the king? One of our rabbis was a physician to the king.
I think that was, yes, indeed, that was the greatest, the Rambam. But he actually fled at a time when there was anti-Jewish. And they left Spain, and he finished up in Egypt and became the physician to, what's his name, Faisal?
The Pharaoh.
The Pharaoh, yes. And so he spent all his day in court attending to the king and the people. And he then went home, and he had a practice, and he attended to people at home, the common people. And that went on till 12 o'clock. Then he would have a sandwich, and then he started his works. And he wrote the greatest works, including A Guide for the Perplexed, which is just one book. One day, I got divorced many years ago, so I think, well, I've got to do something. So I went into the bookshop, and I said, look, I'd like to get Maimonides' chapters. And so I thought, you know, it's a book. It was 14 volumes. I said, well, I'll start one at a time.
It's a long time to be guided.
Yes.
So we have to wrap up.
Should we do another session?
Of course.
Okay, so the wrap-up is next session we'll deal with anti-Semitism, and after that we'll follow on with survival, and then we'll follow on with the Jewish way of answering a question is with a question. That's quite funny. And then we'll deal with Jewish guilt and other guilt, and there's kashrut and mother-in-law. We'll do that next time?
We'll do it next time.
Okay, so we finished for today.
We finished for today.
I hope you all laughed, and please send me some feedback and tell me out of 10, from 0 to 10, what the level of your laughter is. I'm not interested in the level of the jokes. The stories and the history are pretty good. The jokes, I'm not interested in. I just want to know how much you laughed.
Okay.
Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Joe, for taking. And please remember to listen in next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee. Yeah.